You are now joining Children of the Watch.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things Star Wars television. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me, as always, is
Mac Lacey. And Alex, we are bringing the listeners a very special treat. Today, we have with us Emily Swallow, a well-known actress known for her roles in SEAL Team, Supernatural, and many others. And of course, we know her from playing one of the coolest characters in all of Star Wars, the Armorer.
That's right. She's back on our podcast. We've actually interviewed her before, right after season two of The Mandalorian. But now what we're going to do is it's been almost exactly 1 year since her appearance in the Book of Boba Fett, episode 5, Return of the Mandalorian. So we're going to take a look back at that episode because it is such an important episode. It's almost essentially like a prologue for season 3 of The Mandalorian. So we're going to see how that informs season 3 of The Mandalorian. We can't wait to bring her in. Mac, are you ready to do this?
I'm ready.
Let's do it. Emily, thank you so much for being on Children of the Watch, a Star Wars after show with us. And we're just going to start off running with talking about the Book of Boba Fett, specifically your appearance in episode 5, Return of the Mandalorian. And I got to just say, like, from a personal standpoint, as soon as I saw your character, like, I stood up at 5 a.m. in the morning. I was like, okay, this is going to be a good episode. Like, I knew.
You were watching at 5 a.m.?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Our show's recording schedule requires a lot of us sometimes.
I respect that.
Yeah, so it was just amazing to see you. It was such a surprise appearance in the Book of Boba Fett. It was something we were not expecting. So can you tell us?
I had to sit on that secret for like a year too.
Okay. So yeah, I was about to ask like how that came about. Like when did you find out you were going to be in the Book of Boba Fett? And like, what was the timeline of that?
They called me up in, I think it was around April of 2020. And at first they said it was, man, they are so tricky because they said it was going to be for the next season of Mando. And I thought that was, well, I mean, I sort of thought that was odd cause I hadn't heard anything, but then I also didn't think it was that odd because like, I didn't know for sure that I wasn't going to be in season 2 of Mando until I sort of did the math in my head. And I said, okay, I think they're done filming now simply because I knew about other people's involvement. Because no one ever said to me like, you're definitely not going to be in season 2. Like these things are just kept under wraps so tightly. Right. Like you never know. But then I was talking to, Brendan Wayne, who I work with a lot on Mando. And he said, well, I'm looking at a script for the Book of Boba Fett. And I have all these scenes with the Armorer. He said, you're not going to shoot Mando. You're coming to shoot Book of Boba Fett. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then finally I did get a script for the Book of Boba Fett. But yeah, they thoroughly confuse us on purpose, I think, so that we just don't know, you know, we're already like, we have to sign an NDA.
Right.
Not to say anything, but I think they do that just in case we do say something so that people will think we're off our rockers and they wouldn't possibly publish right. anything that we said because it sounds too confused and we can't get our story straight.
Right.
But I did get a script, and once I got it, I was just so flabbergasted by all of the information that I was supposed to be communicating that I sent a message to John and Dave and I was like, can we please have a talk? before I have to come do any of this so that I am well aware of what I am communicating that is supposed to already be established canon and what is new information that we're presenting, right. You know, because some of it, like I thought maybe I knew, but some of it, I just wanted to be absolutely certain that I knew what the armorer was presenting as new information, what, you know, because she's a tricky one. There's some stuff that she sort of, she knows more than she lets on. And so I wanted to make sure I knew what I was hinting at and what I was definitely, you know, laying down as fact and what maybe I was just speculating. And we had a great conversation, and it was actually really surprising to me because of how little, you know, they gave me like really important information during season one, but they let me sort of make my interpretation of things. But they did, they gave me a lot more than I expected for that Book of Boba episode. And they also told me some things that they were sort of putting in place for the next season of Mando, which still, even though they said that and they were like, yeah, you're going to be a part of that, I was like, okay, we'll see, whatever. I'll believe it when I'm there shooting it. but I did get a little sneak peek into what would be in store for that.
Incredible. So one of the things though, like about that episode, you had mentioned like there's so much information that the armorer gives in that episode. And what I love specifically about this episode, it's like almost, it serves as a prologue for season three of The Mandalorian. Like even if you didn't watch the Book of Boba Fett, you could watch this episode and be, okay, now I know where we're going for season three of The Mandalorian. And I just love that. That's just really, really cool to me.
Very, very smart of them. They got the long game really thought out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're delivering these lines and being kind of dropped in these scenes and you have to figure out like, what am I going to bring to this character? How, like what's kind of your thought process as far as like, when you see the scripts, are you coming up with things that the, you know, about the character backstory, things like that to bring into the performance, or do you more just go with what's on the page, or how does that all work?
She's a really, really interesting character for me. Because she, more than I think any other character that I have played, I feel like her backstory is not as important as how she fits into the overall story and sort of how she serves the other characters and sort of what she symbolizes in the story itself. What helps for me, because she does deliver so much exposition, I actually have found it tremendously helpful to work on that text in the same way that I learned to work on Shakespeare or Shaw or any type of complex, well-written text, and to find, you know, what the spine of the text is, like what within all of this flowery language and all of this storytelling, you know, what is the central, most important thought, and to like figure out, okay, what is that in this scene? And then to sort of go from there and to make sure that I know what the, like the simplest through line is. So I know that's what I'm going to focus on in the scene itself. And then to sort of layer everything else on top of that. And what's interesting for me too, is that not only do I have that in the text, but I also have that in large part with what she's usually doing physically in a scene, because she is working her craft so much. And so she can communicate sort of subtextually with her seemingly thoughtless actions. You know, she's doing stuff that you wouldn't necessarily focus on. And it's just like chores that she's doing, but they are things that, because they are second nature to her, I know that there's like little shifts within those. There's little gestures within that that do communicate something when there's something important happening in the text. And you might not pick up on that on a conscious level, but I think that it comes through subconsciously. And that's something that John really helped me focus on. He really helped me, because it's easy because she is so because I have chosen to let her be very even in the way she speaks and sometimes very formal. It can be easy to get sort of performative with the way that she talks, but that's not right either. And so he helps me find a real ease with the way that she's communicating and then to find these subtle little gestures within the tasks that she's going about in her day-to-day work that just add these little flavors that, that to be quite honest, like when we were doing season one and I couldn't see all of it, I was just, you know, sort of feeling it and relying on feedback and hoping for the best. I wasn't quite sure if it was coming through. And then getting to see that and coming back for the Book of Boba Fett, having seen how all of it paid off, I was a lot more comfortable with what I was doing and excited to try more. I see that that does communicate and a little goes a long way. So it's been, she's a really, really enjoyable character to explore and so different from any other that I have ever worked on.
Yeah, what's really cool, I think what we think and a lot of our fans think about the armor is that she's almost like, if you look at Joseph Campbell's monomyth structure, right? It seems like the armor is kind of like Den's mentor figure, like Obi-Wan was for Luke. But what's really cool about the armor to us is like, we still don't know much about her and we don't know what her motivations are. And like with Obi-Wan is pretty like, okay, we get Obi-Wan, but because there's that mask with the armor, it's like, I don't know. I don't know where we're going with this. So it's really, really cool to see that play out. And I think we can all say that we're super excited to see how that continues to play out with the armor and Den and their relationship. One of the questions I have for you, Emily, and do you think the armorer cares for Den in that way? Like an Obi-Wan would for a Luke, or do you think it is like a more formal, like, it's not just about one Mandalorian, it's about all Mandalorians?
That's a really interesting question and one that I have thought about a lot. And I am very tempted to think that she cares for him more. And I have found moments where that feels appropriate, where it feels like it serves a scene. I also think that she... You know, I think that she's someone who is always in service of her community. And I think that she's someone who, I mean, one of the only things that I had to go on when I was auditioning for her was that she was a Zen-like leader. And I still hold on to that, and that I think that she is Zen-like and also maybe Jedi-like in a way, and that she doesn't get too attached. And I think that she knows better than to get too attached even to Den. And so I think that she does. I mean, look, she's invested a lot of time in him. And she has sacrificed for him. But you could also say that the sacrifices she's made for him are because she sees something in him that has a lot of potential that could help the Mandalorians as a whole. So who really knows, you know?
Yeah.
For me as an actor and as a human and as a feeling person, it helps me when I'm playing her to think that she does have feelings for him. And that's a natural result of spending time with him and seeing him develop and seeing him become more feeling. Because when we started with him, you know, he was determined to be a lone ranger and he didn't want to care for anyone. And now he has changed. I can't even say for sure, you know, if that is really about him or if it's more about what he could do for the community as a whole. And if she is really so selfless that, you know, she's doing this because she sees that maybe he can help everyone. And it's not necessarily about the two of them.
Right.
I don't know. That has yet to be revealed for me.
Yeah.
This is actually something Alex and I have kind of talked about a little bit before, but you brought up Shakespeare earlier.
Yeah.
And we know that kind of you've got a love for Shakespeare, just seeing various things on your socials and your early career. If I'm not mistaken, you did a lot of Shakespeare on the stage and everything like that. I think that's a really interesting thing, because Star Wars is traditionally kind of populated by a bunch of actors who have done, you know, Shakespeare a lot. Like Alec Guinness, for example, was a lover of theater and did a lot of theater and Shakespeare and stuff like that. And I think they bring like this almost mythic quality to an otherwise kind of sci-fi world that I think is what makes, it's part of what makes Star Wars so appealing, kind of that mix of sci-fi and fantasy. So I think the armorer, like, I think it's the perfect, character to kind of, use that experience for. Could you tell us a little bit more about, kind of Shakespeare and Star Wars?
Well, I think there's such similar themes. I mean, these themes of redemption and the hero's journey. You were talking about Joseph Campbell and, you know, these quests that these heroes go on for redemption. You know, we see that in Shakespeare, these kingdoms that then the conquests that people go on and these intense rivalries and wanting to have power and the way that power causes people to completely turn on their values and to be so corrupted. You know, that's in Shakespeare, that's in Star Wars. I think that there's such similar themes there. They're not too far apart. And I think that maybe that's one of the reasons that actors who seek out Shakespeare are sort of a natural fit for Star Wars, because even though it's sci-fi, you know, it's different set dressings and it's different costumes and a different time period. The emotion of it and the scope of it is pretty much the same.
Right.
It's just a different set of language. I mean, you know, the specifics of the language are different, but it's very similar feelings and very similar situations, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask you this. If you could choose where your character's path leads, would you want the armorer to break bad or been good?
I want her to bend good. I don't see a point in her going bad after she's been through a lot.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't want her to have to suffer.
Absolutely.
She's had to lug that forge all over the universe already. That's my question every time. When we showed up in the Book of Boba Fett and we were in Glavis Ringworld with that forge, I was like, you guys, how did she get it there? And Dave and John were just like, oh, don't worry about it. And then when we show up in Mando, wherever we are, I won't say where. I was like, where'd the forge come from? How did Paz Vizsla and the armorer get the forge here? And they're like, don't worry about that.
I guess Paz is like the guy that just lugs the forge around. Like, she keeps Paz around to like, okay.
He is a true friend.
really is. He is.
This will be an entire novel in 5 years, just the story of how the forge travels from place to place.
Listen, we have a lot of downtime on set because of, you know, as you may have noticed, it's a very tech heavy show. And I have come up with so many spinoffs and so many backstories, so many things to fill the time. Anything that comes up when we come back and talk again after you've seen season 3 and you're like, well, what happened between this and there? I will have like 10 different answers for you.
I would love a whole novel just from the armor's perspective. Oh my gosh. That would be incredible.
I got it for you.
Oh my goodness. That would
it's
be
very
amazing.
Irreverent though. It's probably not the armor that you know.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
I would be very interested to read that.
Yes, absolutely. So, okay. What was it? Was there any like difference in working on The Mandalorian in the Book of Boba Fett? Like, or was it just almost like a seamless transition right into, oh yeah, this is very familiar territory. Just kind of jump right in. And it felt like The Mandalorian, or were there some differences there?
It was quite different because I shot season 1 of The Mandalorian in the fall winter of 2018. I finished, and I was on set for everything that I did for a total of maybe 7 days. And it was before the show was ever announced. There was nothing about it. I largely did not really know what I was shooting. Right. It was a leap of faith, and it was tremendously enjoyable, but I didn't have time to get to know anybody. You know, everyone was lovely to work with, but I was barely on set. I didn't have time to like really build any relationships. And then the show came out and it was this huge hit and people loved it. And then I started doing some conventions, and then the pandemic happened. And so those sort of stopped. But then I went back to doing a few more conventions. So I got to know the fans a little bit, and I felt like through that, I got to know the show a little bit more and got to know the character more. And in hearing back from other people, I felt the impact of it more, and I felt more settled in it. And so then when they asked me back to do that episode of Boba, I felt a lot more settled in it. And I got to talk to John and Dave a lot more before we shot that. And I had, you know, I had the experience of having seen how the work, how it all paid off and what this show was now. And so I wasn't jumping into it blind. So it did feel very different going back to shoot Boba in such a wonderful way. And I got to go back to work with, I hadn't worked with Bryce in season one of Mando. But I had gotten to know her just a little bit doing press for the show. And she's such a wonderful, wonderful director and such an actor's yes. director. And so it felt so much more familiar. It was so interesting just putting on the armor again. And even though it's still, you know, it's a disorienting thing to wear. Like, it never feels super comfortable because my vision is limited and, it's a little bit clumsy, but because I knew what it looked like and I knew how it translated, it felt a lot better during Boba to be wearing it than it did the first time I was wearing it. And I was like, oh, I hope this looks okay. and I also knew this time around to reach out ahead of time to prepare for those action sequences. Because I had the gift of foresight this time, because also in season one, I had no idea that there was going to be any fighting or anything. And so I didn't know that I could ask ahead of time to like try and be involved with that. Not that I would have been able to do the level of fighting necessary for that fight at the end of season one. But I really wanted to. When I found out there was going to be one, I was like, let me do it. Put me in, coach.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But that was Lauren Mary Kim, who's an amazing stunt performer, doing the majority of that fight. But, you know, so I was able to prepare more. And so it did feel, it was a much less like deer in the headlights kind of experience doing Book of Boba. And then even more so for season three of Mando, I was able to really prepare and I knew everybody more. And I just knew and trusted what I was doing with the character more. And a lot of that was, I mean, a lot of it was because I knew everybody on set, but also a lot of it was because I've spent so much time now going to these conventions and talking with fans and talking about the character and talking about the show and knowing how things are coming across. And that's just been such an invaluable experience. And I love that part of the storytelling process. I love being able to have that piece of the audience interaction, which is something that I love from doing theater, and you don't get as easily when you're doing film and TV. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to seek it out on your own. But I think is so important because the audience is a huge part of that storytelling loop. And I like to be able to close the loop and to be able to share that part of the feedback loop.
Yeah. I love that. So The Mandalorian season three is coming very soon. I'm not going to ask you very much about season three because you probably can't talk about it at all. So,
The fact that I can say I'm in it is fabulous. Right. That was torture with Boba that I did. I did like a year of conventions where I was
that'd be awful.
Not allowed to say anything. So it's nice that I can at least say I'm in it.
Right, because we saw your character in the season 3 trailer that came out this past Monday at the time of our mm-hmm. recording. I just want to ask you, I saw on your social media account that you were waiting for the trailer. What did you think of the trailer?
I liked this one. It was so different from what they've released before.
Yes.
I love how mysterious it was. And I really, really loved that it touched on that issue of that the Mandalorians have been divided. Mm-hmm. And that, because that is such a huge question of season 3, you know, what is it that makes them all Mandalorians? What is it that unifies them, if anything?
Right.
I'm excited. It gave me chills.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
We're very excited as well. That trailer was very, it had the same kind of tone as like when the armor is on the screen.
Yes.
So I really enjoyed that. We're just edges on our seat waiting for March 1st.
Oh gosh, I can't wait.
I'm excited that March 1st finally seems sort of close. It felt so far away forever.
Already I feel like this year is flying by, and 2022 felt super fast. So, in the case of The Mandalorian, that's a good thing, to get to March 1st faster. But thank you so much for spending time with us and just answering our questions. I know our fans so appreciated it. And I think I can speak on their behalf and just saying that you are a fan favorite in the Star Wars community.
Oh, thank you.
A lot of that is because of what you do for the character and what you bring to the character. And so we just want to say thank you for bringing the armor to life, because I don't think she would be the same without you. And I think that is just such a testament to your acting and your performance and your voice performance and all of that. So thank you for being the armor. And then we want to ask you, where can people follow you on social media so that they can keep up with you? Because you're a great follow.
I am on Instagram as Biggie Swalls, which is BigeSwallz. That's also my Twitter handle, though I have to admit I'm hardly ever on Twitter. And I'm doing a lot of conventions this year, and I'm going to try to be posting all of those so that you can find out where I will be. And I would love to say hi to you if you're in any of those cities. And on Facebook, I'm at Emily Swallow Fans, and I try to post on there. And I try to look at my direct messages. Sometimes I am baffled as to all of the different folders that those messages seem to go to. But
yep.
If you reach out to me there, I'll try to keep up with those and get back to you.
Awesome.
Well, Emily, again, thank you so much from Children of the Watch, and we will see you in Mandalorian Season 3.
All right. I'll see you there.
An incredible interview that was. Thank you again to Emily Swallow. And it was incredible, not because of us, but because of her. So thank you for being on Children of the Watch, a Star Wars after show. I had a really fun time interviewing her.
Yeah, for sure. It makes me just that much more excited for Mando Season 3, March 1st. Alex, what was your favorite thing from the convo?
I really, really enjoyed where she was relating her experience with Shakespeare and how that relates to Star Wars, even some of the themes of Shakespeare and how they relate to Star Wars specifically. And it's really cool to see, like, kind of not only the evolution of the armor, like the character, but to see the evolution of how she's being more comfortable playing the armorer, which to me I think that just informs like an even better performance and character as we go forward with Star Wars and everything she appears in. So it's just like, I really love that, like the connection she made to the character
was through the fans. Like when she was going to conventions and meeting fans and just kind of realizing how important the character of the armor was, it helped her even more with playing the armor. And I just love that. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she's been like great right out of the gate, season one. And so it's really cool to see how she's, you know, continuing to develop the character and everything.
So she's going to be in season three of The Mandalorian.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Let's just spend a little bit of time before we get out of here. Let's speculate a little bit. That's what we do best. And what capacity do you think she's going to be in season three in terms of, like, do you think she's going to have a pretty heavy-handed presence in season three? Or is it going to be still more operating out of the shadows, the underground, like she has been?
I'm prepared for a little more armorer on screen this season, I think. And that's what I'm hoping for. Because I love everything with the Children of the Watch, not our show, but the, you know, in Star Wars. Yeah. I'm hoping we get a lot more.
Same. So that's it for the episode. We hope that you guys enjoyed the interview. Don't forget to go to our socials at COT Watch on Twitter and Instagram. And if you could, it would be such a huge help if you left us a 5-star review over on Apple Podcast or Spotify, or frankly, wherever you listen to the podcast. That goes such a long way. And make sure actually you are subscribing to our YouTube as well. You can search Children of the Watch on YouTube. We're going to be relaunching our YouTube with a very special series coming up. You might want to circle mid-February on the calendar. You don't want to miss that because we are going to kick it into high gear, getting you ready for season three of The Mandalorian. It's content that you absolutely don't want to miss, because what's really cool, Mac, is that the content on YouTube might not necessarily match the content on the podcast.
Yeah, we're getting platform specific, baby. You've got all kinds of stuff to look forward to coming up. So be sure that you're subscribed to the feed. Go subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. Go follow us on the socials and go follow Emily on the socials. Yes. She's a great follow on Instagram and stuff. Overall, it's a great day to be a Star Wars fan.
Just like every day.
All right, y'all. Well, we will see you again soon enough. But until then, keep the watch.